You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Jam Packard, and today I am joined by the great Max Liederman of NBC Sports Boston. Now, I don't know if I said your name, your last name correctly, but I decided just to go with it, and it was a 50-50 chance. Is it Liederman or Letterman?
It's Letterman, but some people do go by Liederman, so I'll let it slide. You're only half dead to me.
Okay, that's fair. One more half to go for the rest of the episode. But you guys, the listener gods out there, know Max Liederman. He's the man responsible for putting just great images and just, I would call you the director of propaganda of Erotic City. You're really responsible for controlling the weirdness that goes out into the world as the producer at NBC Sports Boston. So first, I just want to say thank you.
You're welcome. I actually just take other people's good content and I just put it on TV. It's really actually kind of easy.
Yeah, that's well. I feel like you and I play similar roles in kind of this weird Celtics Twitter universe where neither of us are real creators. We're more curators and amplifiers. And so it's been a real fun position. You just get to show other people the stuff you like and you don't really have to do any of the creation of the memes. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and honestly, sometimes when there's something that I don't see out there and I'm like kind of looking for something, I can just tweet out like, man, I need this. And you know, Weird Celtics Twitter always delivers. It's incredible. I mean, they're just so talented and they're fast.
Yeah, no, I wanted Daniel Tice on a bottle of Slice. I got in like 7 minutes. It was fantastic. Now, I'm kind of curious, and the thing that's fascinates me about your position at NBC Sports Boston is they're letting you put this stuff on television, which you just is unexpected in the day and age of just generally crappy television. How did you convince your bosses or the people in charge there to let this happen?
Well, to quote Isaiah Thomas, it was that slow grind. It really was. It's chipping away, and I got to give props to Jim Aberdale, my manager, who finally said yes. And it wasn't always about just like, you know, putting me on TV. It was about just like getting kind of weird with the name keys, you know, the you know, graphics, how we name players, and you know, and I would always ask, it's better to ask a ridiculous question because you never know when they're going to say yes. And finally, he said yes with the Marcus Smart one, and that kind of set the ball rolling.
Which one was that?
That was the lead Celtics in combat muscles and grit.
Oh yeah, and that's fantastic.
It got screen grabbed last year and just and it went viral. And that led me to get interviewed for the Dime Mag piece on the Weird Celtics Twitter. And then Scal saw it and he liked it. And it was his idea to put me on TV. And so whenever he's giving me crap for, you know, how are we're using you in pregame now. And I just said, man, it's your fault. You literally started this.
That's so awesome. You got Scal's endorsement. I did not know that. But it, I mean, the viralness definitely works. And it's been, I feel like every time you guys are doing the new graphics, it's been just picked up by Instagram and people everywhere. So I mean, it's just good old fashioned comedy. Now, how much of like eventually you're getting your own segment for every game? Like, clearly it was well received by the normies out there.
Yeah, it was. I asked, and it's uncomfortable, really, especially as a producer to, you know, kind of like put yourself out there. And it's not really my, you know, I don't think anybody's really comfortable doing it, but this is the time to strike after the, we did a segment on Celtics Post Up with Scal and me about Weird Celtics Twitter. And I just sent an email to the producer, Paul Lucy, for the Celtics games and was just like, why not just do it? Let's just do it tonight. And he said yes. And it was great. I didn't know what to expect. And he said he was okay with it. And we kind of just kept doing it. And every time I get an email about the segment, I'm always worried, like, oh, great, they're going to pull the plug. And it's always just like some sort of like positive feedback or like, hey, maybe we should do it this way or that way. It's never any like, oh, time to pull the plug. So I'm just going to keep going with it.
No, it's so awesome because I can tell you that covering a Celtics team with such a long season and having to come up with content just like basically constantly, the day-to-day analysis gets boring. So it's just so welcome to have like, I don't know, another way of looking at the team other than just sports. And so it's fantastic that the, like, I guess the weirdness has been normalized. Now I'm kind of curious, like, what's your role on the show? Otherwise, and what basically, like, what does a producer do? I only say this because I'm personally curious, because I used to work in sports broadcasting, but then I actually applied to NBC Sports Boston as a production assistant and got rejected. And so I just gave up the dream right there. So I want to know what is this industry I've been missing out on?
Well, you should never give up on your dreams. But I got rejected plenty of times, too, before I finally got my job. But so what I do is I fill in produce for the pre and post game and halftime show. That's my steady role. And I produce Celtics Post Up, the weekly show, America's most talked about Celtics weekly Celtics show.
I just watched it myself. And Chris Forsberg tried to act like he didn't drive around Watertown with Terry Rozier, but mm-hmm. the B-roll says he did. So someone's That's lying
right.
here.
That's right. Yeah. Well, so what I do is when I'm not producing the show, the pregame show, and the producer just, you know, plans everything basically. And you build the rundown and, you know, you talk to the talent, which is usually Kyle and Scal, and you see what they want to talk about. And for the studio shows for the Celtics games, we have a ton of sponsored stuff. So it's really like about how to fit, you know, the important topics, you know, to preview the show into the template that we have for, you know, for all the sponsored stuff. And then filling out the graphic keys. And we have, I don't know if people are familiar with Neurotic City, another helper on the show. He may or may not be me. It's just, we're just going to leave it ambiguous, but he's really great help too. And that's basically it. And it seems simple and, you know, it's never really work. I love my job and I've never thought, man, even when we have an hour long pregame show for Charlotte on Saturday and that I'm excited about that. I'm not even upset about that.
Just because you have more time to fill, it's not rushed. You don't have to get to the Amica game zone.
Well, I mean, no, it is. It's actually kind of hard to fill those hours. But the point is that even when it's difficult to talk for an hour about the Hornets, it's still better than, you know, going into work at 9 and not talking about Yabusele.
Yeah, not talking about. Yeah, exactly. When I try to bring it up at work, people just look at me weird. which of the many hosts on the show has been most receptive to Weird Celtics Twitter? You mentioned Scal liked it initially, but it feels like there's a lot of times where it's just Sherrod or doesn't really get it, or Drapes is hating on you, and Chris Mannix. So I mean, that guy, what a grump.
I mean, I feel like Chris actually probably plays along the best, which is weird.
He knows his role well. He like plays the role of the grump pretty well, like curmudgeonly guy who doesn't like it.
He does, and I don't want to ruin it, but I like Chris. I consider him a work friend, and I think we'd probably say, like, what's up if we saw each other outside of work, but I actually like him. He's not as mean as people think, but definitely on TV he's pretty mean. So he's actually pretty receptive to it. Scal is, too. Scal's invested in that segment. He really is. He'll give me pep talks and stuff afterwards. Like, no, you got to come harder, you know, you can't be too nice, you know, like, you know, drag me if you need to drag me. And so, you know, okay, I'm going to show you getting dunked on by, you know, Juwan Johnson. And so, you know, Scal's actually pretty receptive. And I would say Draper is too. I mean, nobody's really not. But as far as the most buy-in, I think it might actually be Scal.
I mean, yeah, he's got a weird personality. So I see him at games and I don't think he knows what my name is, but I think he would recognize who I am because I bet him $1 the other game in Los Angeles, whether or not Brad would reveal who the starter was because Tatum was out, and he did. So I owe Scal $1. So he might know who I am, but he's always joking around. The other day he bet anyone in the scrum $20, to ask Brad during the pregame scrum how much money Scal's parents paid for him to get into USC. And I was I was so close to doing it, and I just like I got too scared at the moment. Brad's intimidating. I didn't want to like really like it's hard to just bring up be the joke guy with Brad, which is another reason why I kind of enjoy your guys kind of bringing levity to the Celtics organization as general. Like, whose idea was it to bring up a show Marcus Smart, all the weird like Smarf memes?
That was my idea. Actually, I'll take credit for that. But I mean,
the go ahead.
We're all the people. But and I got to tell you, Abby Chin is such an MVP. She, you know, since I was doing, you know, the Felger and Maz Sportsnet Central updates years ago, you know, during the day, you know, just writing those, you know, boring scripts out. I had a little bit of a personal moment where I was just, you know what, I hate doing these. These are boring. So I'm just going to start, you know, writing ridiculous scripts. And Abby was the only one of the anchors back then that was just like, oh, all right, I'll just roll with it. And
that's so awesome.
She rolls with literally anything, and she adds such a good touch to it. And I don't know who else would have, you know, showed Marcus Smart that, you know, anti-fascist propaganda and just go with it. And it was great. So she gets a ton of credit for that because, you know, I'll send everyone crazy questions. And I always just say, please feel free to add or subtract whatever you want. And, you know, for the most part, everyone's pretty receptive, but she really goes all in.
Now, how deep is the knowledge of the NBC Sports Boston staff? I know there are certainly people there who are more online than others. Like Kwani is dating Janos. That's like everyone knows that. DJ Bean's hip. He knows who the Riffs man is. But how many people in the building are like know or follow the Riffs man?
I think probably Forsberg definitely is a little bit more plugged in than people might think.
He's an online guy.
Yeah, he's super online. And I don't think Kyle or Sherrod, you know, they'll see it, they'll laugh at it, but then, you know, I'm sure as soon as I turn away, they're making, you know, who is this guy? But I think that's probably at Abby when she was, you know, before she went on her maternity. But I think Forsberg, you know, Kwani for sure, and definitely DJ.
So I guess it's a good time to take a break because when we come back, I want to talk about your dual fanhood because you are in a very interesting position as a guy who grew up a Sixers fan and now someone who works for the Boston Celtics Sports Network. So we'll talk about that after these messages. And we're back with Max Letterman from NBC Sports Boston. And we're going to talk to him about, Max, you are a Philadelphia 76ers fan at heart, correct?
Correct. Born and raised. It's in my blood. I can't help it.
But you also seem to get a kick and professionally work basically directly with the Boston Celtics. How do you reconcile these two dueling identities, especially on a night like last night?
Well, it's never comfortable, I'll tell you that. It was great during the process because it never mattered. You know, I was actively rooting for the Sixers to lose. And I'll tell you what, it was actually pretty hard to get back to like being comfortable with them winning. Like even last year, I'm like, is this really the year that we want to start winning? But I think working in sports television, it kind of it blunts your fandom just in general, which is it's kind of sad, but not really because I don't like, get super sad when they lose. You know, when the teams I care about lose. And with the Celtics, I just look, I'm emotionally invested in the outcome of their games for sure. I prefer them to win. I just, and not like it sucks when they lose, but I don't get sad when they lose. Like I used to like really get banged up, like especially with football, with the Eagles, whenever they lost, it was like, you know, when I was in college, it was like upsetting. You'd be depressed. But then, you know, you grow up a little bit and then you're working in sports, you just start rooting for outcomes instead of like who. You just want there to be a result. You don't care what the result is. You're like, I just want this game to end so that I can go home. You know, that's in the old days. We have to wait for baseball games to end extra innings. But so that, I think, kind of desensitizes you a little. But last night was uncomfortable because I really do. I love Marcus Smart. And when he first slapped accidentally slap Ben Simmons in the face. It was really just like, it was conflicting. I'm like, I love them both so much. And then the fight with Embiid, it was, I think we were all kind of just like, Marcus, what are you doing, man?
But it was it's objectively funny, that shove. That shove was fantastic. It makes me laugh every single time.
And the picture, too. The look on his face when he's pushing is, it's, I worry that he might actually hurt someone one day. Like, because he is, like, the look on that face is just like, what is in his mind right there? He's consciously, like, he's taken a few beats to think about what his actions, and he's pushed Joel Embiid, and he's just admiring the amount of force he's put into his back. And how far Embiid has gone, because I'm sure Embiid embellished that a little bit too. But Marcus was ready.
It was fully premeditated. Like he planned it out. He took multiple steps in that direction. But that's what makes him great. Now, I mean, like, how do you reconcile the warring franchises, at least on Twitter? I mean, Celtics Twitter and 76ers Twitter, it seems like they've kind of molded into one weird Northeast basketball Twitter, but they go at it. And you just try to laugh at the funny jokes and just ignore the people being mean to each other? Because that's what I try to do.
No. I like chaos for the most part. I enjoy it. I mean, it's what makes the NBA great is the warring fan bases. And, you know, as bad as the Sixers fans can be, as bad as Celtics fans can be, none of us are Heat fans. So that's honestly better, you know, than anything you can ask for, because Heat fans are truly the most disgusting on Twitter. I know they're not really relevant now, but they're the ones that get real nasty real quick. And there's some Sixers fans that I've seen, but to be honest, I only have, like, I don't follow that many Sixers fans. The ones that I do are just, like, my friends from high school, so it's not like they're really, you know, fighting with Celtics Twitter that much. And I think there's a select few 76ers accounts that all of Celtics Twitter kind of respect. You know,
yeah.
And they can have some fun jabbing, because, look, this is it's going to be a blood feud for, you know, probably 5 to 7 more years. The players, you know, will probably start to hate each other a lot if they don't already, and the fans are going to hate each other. And there's a couple, you know, prominent Sixers fans that are on podcasts that have had some choice things to say about Celtics fans, and I'm sure vice versa.
Say the name. Are you talking about the Ricky?
I am talking about the Ricky.
I love the Ricky. It's hilarious. Those guys are hilarious. But yeah, they've said some mean things. It's fantastic.
Right, and honestly, it was funny when Spike Eskin said, he's before last season, not this season, last season, he said, he went on a 6-minute rant. I was mowing my lawn, a 6-minute rant about just how much he hated Celtics fans. And I was like, man, you know what? I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to start to poke this, you know, this controversy a little bit here. And I'm sorry, I dropped my mic, but I went and I logged into our Celtics work account and just added him. Said, "Oh, nice podcast!" And it actually kind of started a bit of a.
Oh, I love that you have that access to rile things up when it comes from the NBC Sports Boston Celtics account. It's got some clout behind it, so you can really you have control to mess with other verifieds at any time. Good to know, Lederman. Good to know.
Yeah, and everyone assumes that I'm always, well, not everyone, but there's a select few people out there on Twitter, and you know who you are, who assume that I'm the one that tweets everything from that account. But it's really not true. I mean, you got to give Kwani and a girl, Kayla, that we work with, a lot of credit for the work that they do on that account. But I will chime in sometimes if I'm in a fighting mood just to – but it's always pro-Celtics. Like, you know, you can't
– it's a company brand, yeah.
Right.
Now, to steal a segment from Celtics post-up, last night, basically, what did you think about Joel Embiid's tagging of his Instagram post, Lametown? After Terry Rozier called him a lame. I mean, to me, Lametown is one of the lamest like names you think of. It was just proving Terry Rozier's point that was a lame joke. Like, the bar for an athlete being petty is quite low, and everyone's like, oh, Lametown. But I don't know. I didn't think it was that cool. I in fact, thought it was lame. Now, you, as an objective fan of both sides, I guess, was it lame or not?
It was lame. Forsberg actually made a really good point on post-up. He said, are you calling Philadelphia lame? Because that's where you are in the picture. Like, you're tagging your own city as lame town. No, I mean, Embiid he's set the bar a little bit higher than that, and I expected more. But think about it this way. They won one game, and it's a 3-1 Celtics lead in the series. They were 3-1 this season, 3-1 last season. They were 3-1 in the playoffs. So, I mean, I think... it would really be like, you know, popping the confetti gun if you try to celebrate too much after that game. Although Sixers fans were quite hyped, but I give them credit because it was kind of a wild game right there, and it had a playoff atmosphere. I certainly wanted to win, but it was like, once Baines got hurt, man, Baines is so cool. Who's your favorite Celtic? I guess you already said this. Marcus Smart is like, I think, the clear everyone's favorite, but Terry gives you a lot of great content, and he's probably the best on camera guy of number of Celtics. But so I guess who are your favorite Celtics as just media entities?
Well, yeah, Terry's great. Terry's a great media entity. He, you know, I could never speak ill about him because he, you know, what he does for our show, specifically Post Up, but he's also he has like no filter. He'll really answer any question, which is great for us. Probably not smart for him, although he doesn't really get himself into trouble, but some of the stuff he said has gotten aggregated out there. But so that's probably him. And honestly, I miss Coffee Shop Kyrie. Last year, Kyrie was just my favorite guy to listen to because he just, the way that he said things was completely unnecessary, but great, you know. And then this year just got dark, man. Everything got really sad.
Yeah.
But Marcus Morris is another guy that's pretty good on camera.
Every beat writer is just, it's like a race to talk to Mook because Mook is pretty unfiltered. And so it's just anytime there's a good quote, you'll just see the guys that contemplating trying to get to Mook. There's any other weird Celtics Twitter things you'd like to talk about? Favorite memers, favorite memes, most recent meme that you've been crushing on.
Well,
I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that, but you're tapped in.
It's okay. There's my hot memer of the week or the last couple of weeks is, I'm going to butcher the name,
Holati. Holati.
Holati.
The Polish meme machine.
He's incredible. It's art. And I'm always partial to Efren Ramos. He is, woo. I mean, he's like, I hope he has a graphic arts job. I hope that's what he gets paid to do because that man is incredible. Or boy or girl, I actually have no idea. I'm assuming it's a guy.
He does some crazy GIF work, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and then anybody else, and obviously Riffsman. Riffsman's the leader of the pack. And Jack Michael also, I respect the hell out of his ability to get a response from anybody on Twitter. He his ability to just strike up friendships with any famous person he tweets at is one of the most impressive things I've seen on that website.
Well, he's got a very good strategy of just saying I love you to the person repeatedly. Eventually, that just builds up enough, good karma. And people are like, yeah, I like what this guy's saying. And then they were talking to him. But yeah, he turned, what is it, Rian Johnson, the director of Star Wars, into a Celtics fan. It's amazing.
Yeah. And he's got Clay's dad, too, and all the chefs. And all
Michael Thompson will respond to anyone.
Yeah, that's true. But it seems like him and Jack have a real connection.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're close. They're after Jack bought the Liberty Ballers, him and Michael Thompson celebrated on a boat.
Oh, man.
All right. I'm going to have one more segment left after this break. I want to ask you about your twin sister, who is a stand-up comedian, and said some salacious things about you when I saw her do stand-up comedy last week in L.A. So we'll talk to you about your twin sister after the break. Locked On Celtics podcast with Max Liederman. Now, Max, you are director of propaganda of Erotic City. You're a Sixers fan, but you're also a twin, and your twin sister happens to be a pretty famous stand-up comedian. What is that like?
Well, it's actually pretty good. It's pretty nice. People always ask, like, oh, man, was she funny when you were growing up? Like, no, she was just really mean. Incredibly mean, which is funny.
But
now.
Was it, but was it in a funny way? It was like, did she think it was funny when she was mean?
Yeah, I'm sure she probably did. But and truthfully, she was. So we're twins, and we're born 6 minutes apart. I was born at 11:58. She's born at 12:04. So we're born on separate days.
Ooh,
she was. Yeah, it's crazy, right? And she actually was like 6 inches taller than me for a lot of our childhood. So I was technically older, and even like we, you know, celebrate on different days, but she would, so, and she was pretty violent too. She's a pretty violent child.
She went through a choking phase, a kicking Ooh. Phase, a throwing scissors phase. But, you know, it's all funny now to laugh at. And I look back fondly at those memories. But in the moment, it wasn't that. I wasn't laughing.
That's fair. Now, she does... I would say she's pretty a graphic comic and says some things about you on stage. I'm assuming most of them are jokes because they're kind of based on very outrageous premises. But have you been in the crowd and like heard those jokes? Do you find them hilarious or is it like embarrassing?
I usually laugh. Honestly, I've always been of the idea that like, I just, you know, humor is humor, even if it's my expense, if we're all laughing, good. You always have to remember with comedy, it's truth, truth, lie. So a lot of the stuff that she says that seems ridiculous, at least about our upbringing and our family and kind of the situations that we were in, are true. She will add a little extra. So anything really super bad, she was definitely lying about. I don't know specifically what you're talking about, but I've been in the crowd with my dad too, and she'll make jokes about, you know, inappropriate things in their relationship that are obviously not true, but like people laugh and then she'll say, and there's my dad over there and point to our table. And it's like, it's actually him.
Well, I mean, if your dad's is game enough to take the jokes, I think it's fair. Did you ever have a desire to be stand-up comedian, or is this like something that you're clearly now in a creative field where you're on camera? Did you see both of you like, What was in the water where you grew up in Philadelphia?
No, it was never. We come from, our dad's pretty funny. Our mom tries to be funny, just embarrasses us and herself in the process. We have an older brother who's funny. So we've been, you know, just naturally just, you know, we just like to make people laugh. But I never thought of that as anything for a career. And she went to college, I think, for like psychology. I don't even know. But
some shit.
She just told me that she wanted to do comedy one day, and I was like, okay, whatever, sure. And then she just started doing it, and that's like the most impressive thing is, I mean, she is just a worker. She's a real hard worker and just gets out there, and that's so, I don't think I could ever. I mean, I won't shut anything off, but if it was for charity, maybe I would, but like get on stage and try to make people laugh. I mean, it's different when you're on TV trying to get like Kyle Draper and Brian Scalabrine to laugh at like a Yabusele bobble butt.
Especially when all the artwork is already done for you.
Right. When I can see, no, this is objectively funny. So no matter what they think, the audience will think it's funny. But it's different when it's like, even though it's on TV, I'm just looking at those two guys and it's not like, it doesn't feel like a crowd. When she's doing it, she's like seeing the facial expressions of the people that she's trying to get to laugh. And she just tells me, man, you just got to bomb sometimes and just be okay with it. And just lean into the bomb. And it really actually, she's given me a lot of great advice just for life in general about stuff like that. You know, just kind of got to trick yourself into being like incredibly confident when you're up there. But we definitely did not think that that was going to be the case growing up. But I'm super glad it is. And I'm just really excited. She really seems to be taking off.
Now, I just remembered a curveball of something that I wanted to ask you way earlier. So I'm going to change topics abruptly. You're a big guy. You're a big space guy. You've told me this before, and you told me we could talk about space movies anytime. And I've only really seen one space movie and know it well. So I'm just going to yell Apollo 13 quotes at you, if that's okay.
You can. Yeah, sure.
Okay, so if you're in the tank, or if you're in the seat, and the call comes down, and you're Fred Hayes, do you stir the tanks?
Well, I think you're supposed to, right? I mean, they're just following orders, right? I mean, you got to do it.
Exactly. That's why Gary Sinise, oh no, Kevin Bacon was being a dick.
Right. And I don't know if any of that's really true, because I remember I was watching a NASA documentary about that, I think last weekend, and I haven't seen Apollo 13 in years. So I'm more familiar with the story that was told in this documentary, which I'm pretty sure Gary Sinise actually was the
With the actual Apollo 13.
Yeah, I've really been into the Apollo stuff. I think it's just the 50-year anniversary, which, fun fact, remember how I told you my sister and I were born on different days? Well, I was July 19th. She was July 20th, which is the day they landed on the moon. So she got the cool day.
Oh, that's too bad. Now, I just learned a fun fact about Apollo 13 is that that was the farthest they were ever away from the moon, because they had to slingshot around it. which is pretty cool. What a bold play of just being able, like, hey man, we're not going to land on the moon. Let's just use its gravity to send us back the other way. Like, what if they didn't work? Man, they were lost forever.
Yeah, just imagine that, just being like, oh, we actually miscalculated and you're just going off into oblivion.
We really got to get the numbers right.
Yeah, no, and that's honestly the thing that I really like, respect them out of the Apollo mission, is that, man, they were just using math and like calculators
and slide and rules
and a shitload of rocket fuel and just like lit it and just aimed. And they just went up there and they got it right, which is and even when disaster happened on Apollo 13, they still survived, which is incredible. But yeah, imagine being on the dark side of the moon and like no communication with Earth. You can't even see the planet that you're from. Oof.
That's terrifying. That's some wild stuff. All right. I'm glad we got my Apollo 13 sidestep in. The last thing I wanted to talk about. Now, this is a bold idea. You're the guy who seems to be able to pitch ideas to the people who put things on television. You yourself are a man who puts things on television. Now, I'm going to be up front. This is a pitch that involves putting Jam Packard on television. I'm going to say it right now. But other NBC sports networks have shows like the Warriors or the Trailblazers called Warriors Outsiders or Trailblazers Outsiders, where they have wacky people of the internet come in and talk about the Celtics. What do you say me and you team up and make Celtics outsiders?
Oh, I mean, I've emailed about that before. About
I knew you had. I can just sense it.
And the issue is that the other RSNs actually they don't have as many shows as we do because they have more teams. They have more teams that they cover or that they have games for. We only have the Revs once a week in the summer. And actually, it's Revs basically all season because MLS is the longest season ever. But we have Revs and Celtics. So the other RSNs that are in the NBC Sports family don't have as many nightly shows. But there is a chance that is a thing that happens for sure. And I will definitely put a good word in for you.
Yeah. Who do I need to talk to get an audition tape? I guess I could just make my own audition tape, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We'll get you in here. We'll do a little audition. I'll send this tape to the bosses and hopefully, they'll only say no once and we'll ask them again and they'll say yes.
Hey, there you go. That's thinking optimistically. All right. Anything else you'd like to talk about when you're on the famous Rain and Jay's airwaves? I know you're a television guy who goes out to millions and millions of people, but you have a chance now to talk straight to the Rain and Jay's listeners. Anything else you'd want to talk about?
Well, I'm just really mad at Jay King, and I want everyone to know that his Northeastern slander today was pretty uncalled for.
I saw that, and I would highly recommend you roast Jay King next time you can get on the Celtics post-up, because everyone loves talking shit about Jay King. It's just, I don't know what it is about him. Maybe it's his slight bravado that he just seems to catch arrows from all directions, and it's always a good time.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's never like a plan to make fun of Jay King. It's always, it just comes up. So like Scal or Mannix or someone will bring it up, and we'll have to make sure that we bring some more up. I will unorganically put it in my rundown for next week's Celtics post-up, and I might even on Saturday, maybe even in pregame. Let's preview the Hornets game. Jay King sucks.
That'd be fantastic. Please do that. All right, Max, I appreciate you joining us here on Locked On Celtics podcast, where people can find you on the internet on Twitter. I'm assuming your handle is at Max Lederman, correct?
Yeah, it's Max_Lederman.
Letterman, I kept on messing up your name. I even asked you to start the interview. That's not a good look for your guy, Jam.
It's all right. I'm used to it. Max_Lederman, LederMan. And listen, guys, it's not about MeTube. It's about YouTube. You can find me on YouTube as well. Yeah, I got myself like 150 subscribers. I'm just there posting all the post-game plus hits that we do Weird Celtics Twitter up there. So until they tell me to stop.
That's great. So all the amazing tweets and memes that you summarize each night after the Celtics games, you can find them on his YouTube channel. Also, when is Celtics post-up air?
The normal time is Thursdays at 8. Sometimes there's a game, so it's Fridays at 8. So it's either Thursdays or Friday night at 8.
Sounds good.
So Sports Boston.
Ooh, there you go. So thanks to Max Lederman from NBC Sports Boston. This has been another episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you are a new listener, please subscribe. If you are a listener general, please give us a 5-star review. It very much helps to make us a little bit more money. And so that's all we're really looking for here. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.